When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, like Skims or Allbirds, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and great marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. It's home of Shop Pay, the number one checkout in the world. You can use it to boost conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going through to checkout. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Allbirds uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/income, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/income to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/income.
Hello, this is Dr. Grande. Today, I will analyze the Lake Tahoe avalanche of February 2026. First, I'll look at the background of this case, move to the timeline of the incident, then offer my analysis. Lake Tahoe is a freshwater lake in the Sierra Nevada. It sits along the border between California and Nevada, with about two-thirds of the shoreline in California. Lake Tahoe is the largest alpine lake in North America and a major year-round tourist attraction. In the winter, many visitors travel to the lake to enjoy activities involving the snow, like riding snowmobiles and skiing. Downhill skiing is quite popular, but there are other types as well, like cross-country and backcountry skiing. Cross-country skiing typically occurs on a trail and focuses on endurance and efficiency. It is highly accessible even for beginners. The primary safety risk for a cross-country skier is typically hypothermia. Backcountry skiing is quite a bit different than cross-country. It occurs off-trail on terrain that is untouched. This includes mountains, forests, and powder fields. Backcountry skiing is about exploration and covering challenging terrain. It is more risky than cross-country skiing and typically attracts more advanced skiers. This exciting view of nature comes at a cost. These skiers must contend with a pronounced threat from natural hazards like rocks, trees, cliffs, and avalanches. Now moving to the timeline of the incident. On Sunday, February 15, 2026, snow began to fall at Lake Tahoe and the surrounding Sierra Nevada region. This storm was not a surprise. It had been predicted well in advance, and the characteristics of the storm when it arrived were as expected. In some areas, like on Castle Peak, the snow fell at a rate of 3 to 4 inches an hour. Castle Peak is a mountain northwest of Truckee, California. It is near Donner Pass and Frog Lake. The highest point on the mountain has an elevation of 9,109 feet. On the same day the snow started, Sunday, February 15, a group of 11 backcountry skiers and 4 guides set out from the Castle Peak trailhead and headed toward Frog Lake. The company that organized this excursion was called Blackbird Mountain Guides. The group successfully completed the 3.5-mile trek to Frog Lake, which was referred to as the Western Route. They stayed in the Frog Lake backcountry huts for 2 nights while skiing in the area. These huts are on private property and at an elevation of 7,600 feet. In the winter, they are only accessible by ski, snowboard, or snowshoe. The cost to rent a hut was $1,800 per person for the 2 nights. It is likely the group members found them pretty comfortable. The huts have electricity, hot water, bathrooms, and there's a stone lodge that contains a commercial kitchen. On the day the group was scheduled to return to the trailhead, Tuesday, February 17, the Sierra Avalanche Center issued an avalanche warning for Lake Tahoe at 5 a.m. that read, "High avalanche danger exists in the backcountry." At this point, the group needed to think carefully about their options. Avalanche risk can be measured by using the Avalanche Terrain Exposure Scale. This scale has 5 levels, 0 through 4. 0 is the non-avalanche level, so there is no risk, and 4, the extreme level, there's a lot of risk. The western route, which would lead the group back to the trailhead, was rated at level 3, or complex. This level leads to, quote, exposure to multiple overlapping avalanche paths or large expanses of steep open terrain, sustained exposure to overhead hazard, many avalanche starting zones and terrain traps with minimal options to reduce exposure, unquote. If the group determined that the western route was too dangerous to use at that time, they did have at least 3 other options. Option number one, there were a few different versions of the western route that would have reduced exposure to avalanches. Option number two, an eastern route was available, which is rated level one, or simple. This level features exposure to low angle or primarily forested terrain and has many options to reduce or eliminate exposure. It's worth noting that the eastern route is 4.5 miles instead of 3.5 miles, somewhat harder to navigate, especially in bad weather, and leads to a different trailhead. This would have been somewhat inconvenient for the group members as far as returning to their vehicles. Option number three, the group could have remained in the huts until the avalanche risk declined significantly. The huts are considered safe even when the risk of an avalanche is high. In a surprising move, the group left the huts and they took the 3.5 mile western route back to the trailhead. It is not clear why they made this decision. As it turns out, this was a suboptimal choice. When the group was only 0.5 mile into their journey, they were next to a mountain called Perry Peak. This is just to the north of Frog Lake and just to the east of Castle Peak. Perry Peak has an elevation of 8,400 feet. At about 11:30 a.m., a slab of snow the size of a football field slid off the northwest side of Perry Peak. The avalanche was classified as D2.5, which is sufficient to bury and kill multiple people. Someone yelled avalanche right before the snow slammed into the group. 6 members of the group survived, 4 men and 2 women. Of the 6 survivors, 5 were skiers and 1 was a guide. They called 911 and a search and rescue operation was initiated. While they were waiting to be rescued, they frantically dug through the snow and pulled out 3 members of the party. But those people were already dead. At about 5:30 p.m., first responders reached the survivors of the avalanche. By this time, they were in a makeshift shelter they constructed with tarps. 2 survivors were injured and were transported to a hospital. Rescuers started the grim task of recovering the bodies, which took a while. 9 members of the group were killed in the avalanche. 6 of them were skiers: Carrie Atkin, Danielle Keatley, Kate Morse, Kate Vitt, Caroline Seeker, and Liz Claybaugh. Caroline and Liz were sisters. 3 of the victims were guides: Andrew Alessandrados, Michael Henry, and Nicole Chu. At the time I'm making this video, the authorities continue to investigate the circumstances surrounding the avalanche, including whether criminal negligence was a factor in the disaster. Now moving to my analysis. Some people familiar with backcountry skiing believe that the blame for this tragedy should not be placed on the guides. They note that this activity is inherently dangerous, and people who ski like this know they are taking their chances. They are putting their lives at risk every time they go out. It is just the nature of backcountry skiing. There is no way to completely mitigate the risk of dying in an avalanche. In the United States, there are about 25 avalanche deaths a year. Since 1950, 74 people died in avalanches in California, not including this disaster. Other people familiar with backcountry skiing disagree. They argue that these guides were well-trained and had a lot of experience. There was no excuse for leading the group through a high-risk area. They could have taken a safer route or remained in the huts, which would have guaranteed their safety. They argue that the failure to select a safer option constitutes criminal negligence. This brings me to the question: was criminal negligence involved on the part of one or more of the guides? Let's take a look at the evidence both for and against the idea that there was criminal negligence, starting with the inculpatory factors. The guides had proper training and were experienced. They knew how to manage their exposure to avalanche risk. Prior to the beginning of the excursion, the avalanche risk in the area was already moderate. So even when the trip started, there was something to be worried about as far as avalanches. In addition, the forecast indicated that a lot of snow was on the way. Blizzard conditions would be upon them. In theory, the decision to leave the safety of the Frog Lake backcountry huts was made by one or more of the guides. This is not a decision that would have been made by the backcountry skiers. The guides failed to select safer options like remaining in the huts or taking a different route. Mountain safety experts recommend not backcountry skiing when avalanche risk is elevated. If somebody insists on engaging in this activity, they should at least avoid steep slopes. The guides led the group of backcountry skiers directly beneath a steep slope. Even if exposure to an avalanche-prone slope is unavoidable, The best practice is to expose only one person to the avalanche path at a time. This can be managed through proper spacing. This leaves all the other people available to help the individual out in the event they are buried by an avalanche. How is it that an avalanche only 300 feet wide was able to kill 9 people? Why did the guides have the group bunched up together so tightly? Now moving to the exculpatory factors. The guides and the backcountry skiers were fully equipped with avalanche safety equipment. When backcountry skiing during a blizzard, there is a pronounced risk of becoming disoriented. If one of the guides was the leader, that guide could have simply made a bad decision while disoriented, which the other guides followed due to the leadership structure. When considering all the evidence that is available so far in this case, do I believe there was criminal negligence on the part of one or more of the guides? In my opinion, I am convinced that at least one of the guides was guilty beyond a reasonable doubt. The problem is, 3 of the 4 guides died in the avalanche, so it is going to be very difficult to figure out who was responsible. It might just be about impossible. I think this investigation, realistically, is more about learning lessons that can help other people who decide to engage in backcountry skiing. This isn't necessarily about blaming anyone, it's about protecting other people. What do I think happened in this case? This is just a theory, my opinion. This case is probably straightforward. Someone made a bad decision and everyone else went along with it. There's no way to know if all the people had all the available information. Arguably, the guides were required to know about the weather conditions and the avalanche risk. The backcountry skiers were not required, but knowing would have been a good idea. This type of skiing may be inherently dangerous, but this group took an unacceptably high risk. They had safer options available. Their behavior makes no sense. At the very least, they could have maintained spacing that reduced avalanche exposure to one person at a time. One lesson learned in this case is that anyone who decides to backcountry ski should learn everything possible about mitigating avalanche danger. That means knowing about weather conditions, routes, and spacing. This way, the skier can recognize if their guide is making a good decision or a poor decision. A second lesson learned in this case is don't backcountry ski when the risk of an avalanche is high. It might be inconvenient to reschedule an excursion, but not as inconvenient as being buried in an avalanche. Those are my thoughts on the Lake Tahoe avalanche of February 2026. Thank you so much for watching. I'll talk to you soon.